It's all the files of the whole park. It tells you everything.
Sir, he's uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
He's a vigilante that goes by the alias GamerDoc. He infiltrates secret online doldrums to hunt down wrongdoing and the dishonest who prey upon and exploit the system.
I never cared who you were.
And you were right.
But shouldn't the people know the hero who saved them?
A hero can be anyone.
His target, you might ask? The many cheating gamers out there using code to be really good at titles like Valorant and Overwatch. Because there's a huge underbelly of cheating gamers out there who trade and sell gaming exploits, the 0 days of video games, to get to God mode level skill without the hours of practice. Believe it or not, cheaters and hackers are a huge problem for gaming companies. And today, we have Motherboard reporter Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai on the show to tell us about the infamous cheater hunter, GamerDoc. We interviewed GamerDoc, and you'll be hearing his take on things as Lorenzo and I unpack this story. I'm Ben Maku, and this is Cyber. Hello, Lorenzo.
Hey, Ben. How was your trip?
I was very busy. It was a very busy trip. And I have to tell you, as you know, for this particular return to the pod that I have for us, I am not a gamer. I don't know anything about gaming, really. But you, on the other hand, you're a gaming fanatic. And
Especially in the last few months.
Especially in the last few months, for obvious reasons. And this one is about a vigilante who is hunting down cheaters. Now, I am familiar with the concept of cheaters in video gaming. Mm-hmm. And I am familiar with people who really don't like cheaters in video gaming. So tell me about this guy.
Yeah, so his name is Mohammed Al-Sharifi, but he's best known online as GamerDoc.
A former esports player for Overwatch. I kind of like stopped playing because I found a new passion. I've just been trying to find ways to break cheats and destroy cheating businesses and get justice, basically, for players.
And in the last 2 years, he has contributed to the banning of 50,000 to 70,000 cheaters across Overwatch and Valorant, which are two very popular online competitive games. Overwatch is made by Blizzard and Valorant is made by Riot Games. And, you know, this may seem like a crazy claim, you know, that he is responsible for 50,000 or 70,000 bans, but sources in the gaming industry told me that that's feasible, that obviously it's not only him, you know, he reports the cheaters to the companies, then the companies have to do their job. And he also has a kind of a small community of people that help him out. He has like a Twitter account. He has Discord chats where other volunteers sort of police these online communities and try to find cheaters. So it's not just him, but it's kind of fascinating because he's the leader of this volunteer army or vigilantes.
50 to 70,000 cheaters? That is a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, some of them could be the same person. You know, I think that's accounts more than people. You know, it's hard to tell whether people, you know, someone could have more than one account and keep trying to cheat. But yeah, that's a lot. And, you know, I think that one thing that it's important to understand about this sort of scene is that, you know, some of these cheats can go for hundreds of dollars. So the way that the market works is that, you know, if I'm playing Valorant, let's say, and I'm tired of being bad and, you know, I can't kill anyone. So I go online and I look for cheats and, you know, this is not illegal. So there's online websites, communities, forums, Discord chats where you can pay and get these cheats. And this is a pretty big market. Some of these cheats can go for hundreds of dollars. And usually they work under a subscription model. So for example, you know, I pay you, you're a cheat developer. I pay you like, let's say $100 or $200 a month, so that you can give me support for this cheat. So if the company, gets the cheat banned, you create a new one and I can keep cheating. So depending on the popularity of the game, you know, some of these games are played by tens of thousands, millions of people sometimes. So depending on the popularity of the game, some of these cheat developers are making hundreds of dollars, definitely thousands of dollars, ten thousands of dollars. So it's a huge market, and this guy is basically going after it. And, you know, people, these cheaters don't like him.
So let me just get this straight. How are these cheats actually found and how do these cheats actually work? Is this a flaw in the code of games like Valorant?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's why we're talking about it today on Cyber. Like, essentially, cheats are just like, finding cheats is just like hacking. You know, these developers are essentially hackers. They look at the code of the video games, they find flaws, and then they also have to find a way to get around the anti-cheat systems. Because these days, most video games have very sophisticated anti-cheat systems. For example, Riot Games has a system called Vanguard, which is essentially an antivirus. It sits in the at the kernel level in Windows, so it has the most privileges. It runs as soon as you turn on your computer, and it monitors everything that happens on your computer. So it's a very aggressive system that is designed to detect anything that's unusual happening on your computer. But yeah, going back to your original questions, yeah, cheaters are in a way hackers. And actually, a lot of people that work in cybersecurity, if you ask them how they started, they will tell you that they started by reverse engineering video games and finding flaws in video games. So there's a lot of overlap between cheating and regular hacking.
So it's basically, like, if I'm getting this straight, it's kind of like, it's almost like the zero-day market for cheaters, except it's video games.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, instead of the stakes are obviously not as high. You know, we're talking about probably like kids that want to cheat because they're not very good, or maybe they want to troll their friends. And but the developers, it's possible that some of these developers are also people that develop serious 0 days, and this is just their side business. So, and it's a huge market because there's so many video games, and the gaming industry is such a big industry these days.
So our vigilante friend, is he familiar with hacking and coding, and he's able to identify some of these cheats?
No, actually, he's not a hacker. He's more like, he's just a gamer, and he has this passion for finding cheaters. And he's not really technical, but he's more of a, what he does is mostly like he lurks in like cheating communities, you know, undercover, basically.
Some cheats even require you to even like send in an ID or have an interview through Discord or send papers and stuff through them. And it's really weird. They're really trying their best to stay hidden and stay undetected so they can like keep selling the cheat.
He socially engineers cheat developers into giving him cheats. And he has established good relationships with companies like Riot and Blizzard, and he feeds them information. It's sort of like an informant of sorts.
He's basically an informant on the cheating community of video gaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting also because he doesn't get paid for this. He does it just for, you know, for because it's his passion. But some of his techniques, like infiltrating communities and becoming an informant, are also used by gaming companies that are getting more sophisticated at fighting cheating.
Some communities you cannot find at all. You need to be invited by someone within that community to enter it. And I am in several of those communities.
So he's been, I mean, this is kind of like, I mean, as you know, I report on domestic terrorism, and this guy is basically like an anti-fascist infiltrator, essentially to video gaming communities and stopping and actually like helping these companies.
Yeah, and you would think that, I mean, obviously his life is not as dangerous as an anti-fascist infiltrator, but it can get a little hairy. Like he's gotten like death threats.
Really?
At some point, someone created a GoFundMe to pay for a hitman that would take him out.
I would say I have many enemies doing this. I have people who try to make a GoFundMe to try and get an assassin after me. I have people who send me like really gore type shit. I have people who just make fun of my looks, make fun of my weight, make fun of me pretty much. Best they can, just try to bully me. But I think over the time I've grown out of the negativity, I guess. I've seen way too much negative things that I've, I guess, grown used to it. Some things do bother me. Some things just don't bother me at all anymore.
I think that this was mostly trolling. I don't want to believe that someone would actually, you know, hire a hitman to take out a guy that goes after cheaters in video games. I don't want to believe that we are at that point in the history of humanity. But yeah, you know, it's like people harass him.
Wow.
That's... He's gotten sent like gory pictures as a way to intimidate him. And I think it's, again, like we have to remember that this is, even though we're just talking about video games and, you know, it's basically a pastime, but there's a lot of money behind all this.
Because all these people realize like if, or all these people think that what he's doing is completely bullshit.
Yeah, we actually spoke with a guy that developed what was at some point one of the most sophisticated cheats for Valorant. It would allow you as a player to essentially become invincible. Every shot you took was a headshot. You know, you became unstoppable. And GamerDoc somehow found a way to get the code, the cheat, and reported the cheat to Riot and got it banned. And this guy was very salty. He was like, "Yeah, GamerDoc is a nobody. He, you know, it's not as good as he claims to be." But it just sounded like he was very mad that his cheat got banned. And this guy was making money. Like he was offering support for this cheat for like 15 euros a day, 7 euros a week, 150 euros a month, or 500 for life. So you know, if it's like And he claimed to have 10,000 users. So if you do the math, like that's decent money, you know, for like something that's just a video game cheat. So I'm obviously was mad about it.
Probably not enough for me to hire a hitman to stop someone. Like I think like 500 euros is probably not worth a life sentence for conspiracy to murder.
I feel like that you shouldn't be that mad. You know, you're creating cheats. Like obviously. Being caught is part of the game, I guess.
But I mean, this is also just like another example of how coding and the ways in which people find flaws in everything in society gets sort of utilized in the different offshoots of how this works in our culture. And it's gotten so extensive that even there's both vigilante cheater hunters and these cheaters who have a real horse in this race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good reminder that everything these days is hackable, right?
Just like as you would say, no game is unhackable, no cheat is undetectable.
Everything in our lives basically runs on code. And as we know, code is not perfect because it's written by humans. So everything that runs on code will have flaws. And if there's flaws, there's going to be someone that tries to exploit them. And if the thing is popular enough, that those exploits, those flaws have a certain value, monetary value. So there will be a market for exploiting those flaws. And yeah, as you say, it's fascinating that there's like a thriving market of hackers who sell what are essentially, yeah, 0 days for gamers. And there's also this new movement of volunteer vigilantes that try to help gaming companies go after these hackers.
And GamerDoc himself, I mean, is he a big time gamer?
Yeah, he says that especially now, unfortunately, he got laid off from his job because of COVID. And so, yeah, he spends most of his day like gaming and spying on cheaters, essentially.
And what's Blizzard and Riot's perception of these types of characters, these types of vigilante mm-hmm. characters?
Yeah, Blizzard did not talk to us. But Riot Games did. They sent us a statement by the lead for their anti-cheat system. His name is Paul Chamberlain, and he said, "quote We're always happy to receive information from people, especially if they have insight into cheating communities. The information people like GamerDoc provides help us accelerate our anti-cheat development and ultimately gets cheaters out of the game faster." And this is a company that's been very aggressive going after cheaters. As I said, they developed this super advanced and very aggressive engine called Vanguard. They also, their developers are all on Twitter, sort of like taunting cheaters. Like when they launched the game, I think it was Paul Chamberlain himself on Twitter was like, We just caught 8,000 cheaters and banned them. The game is better now. Also, couple of weeks ago, there was kind of a big controversy because a pretty famous Valorant online gamer announced that he was like retiring from the game due to like mental health issues and stress. And this was a guy that was on his way to become like a pro, because, you know, some of these games have like pro leagues where people like get paid a lot of money to play. And one of the Valorant security engineers replied to his tweet saying, please next time don't cheat. So like he shamed him publicly for cheating. So there's like a lot of tension in the community, and it's kind of a fascinating subset of the cybersecurity world.
And like, what is the nature of cheating across most video games? Like, is this something that happens pretty frequently?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's been happening forever. Like a couple of years ago, we wrote about this guy that had been cheating in massively multiplayer games like Ultima Online and stuff like that. And mostly he was creating cheats so that he would like amass huge amounts of like resources that he could then resell and monetize. And he essentially found a way to like make a living. Like for 20 years, he didn't have a job. His job was to make cheats and make money off of these games. So it's, you know, it's kind of an underground world that we still don't know much about. And there's a lot of money. Every game, you know, especially the games that are online, that are free, like Call of Duty Warzone, people just like to acquire cheats so that they can kill people more easily and they can win more easily. And it's a huge problem because it kind of like, you know, it ruins the game for everyone. You know, imagine it's like if you went to play soccer and, you know, this guy shows up and is, you know, he's just better than anybody else and makes all these like improbable moves, and, you know, it just ruins the game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think that's kind of the difference between video game cheating and real world sports cheating. Because like, I was admittedly just such a cheater in real world sports, and everyone who's like hyper competitive is just an absolute cheat in any way possible. But you still can't have a cheat code where you like can be Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you can't.
It's just like you kicking someone's ankle behind the back of a referee. It's not like God mode.
Yeah, exactly. This is basically God mode. Like some of these gamers, like we have a video in the story and it's like this guy is just like, you know, every shot he takes is a headshot. So it's like, what? And, you know, what's even what is the fun in that? I don't know. You know, like I feel like I wouldn't find that funny. You know, maybe to troll a friend once in a while, but like I don't see why people do it, to be honest.
Like cheating is a very addictive thing. A lot of people try to stop with like using cheats and stuff. They can't really do it because they're so satisfied with like getting high kill streaks, being relevant, getting all this attention, just a lot of dopamine being like it literally is like drugs pretty much, like almost. It's really weird to say that because it's games and like, but cheating is pretty much like drugs.
Yeah, there's something really scummy and shitty about it. And also the fact that you get all these guys getting really pissed off about it. Like, I sort of fail to understand gamer culture just on the whole. But it's like they're getting pissed off because they suck at games and they're cheating and somebody's calling them out for sucking at this. like, dude, my man, my guy, give your head a shake.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with like playing a lot of games and wanting to get better and spending a lot of time playing video games, but like, you know, do it fairly, you know, don't ruin the game for everybody else. You know, a lot of us are still locked down at home and we log on to these video games to have a good time with our friends and just forget about real life problems. And if it's, you know, if someone kills me from the other side of the map because they're using a cheat, then yeah, it's just, you're ruining my experience. Why are you doing that? Just play fairly, you know?
So does GamerDoc have any plans to sort of make this a more legitimate community of vigilante hunters to sort of legitimize the act and the profession of
cheater
hunters?
Yeah. He says that his dream is to make this into a job. He doesn't really have a plan to monetize this. But he does have a plan to expand it. So he's working on a website where everyone can everyone will be able to report cheaters, and the system is pretty sophisticated. You know, I can't just say, you know, Ben Maku is a cheater. I have to like collect some evidence, like a video, say when the alleged cheating happened, what time, where we were playing, what we were playing. So like every person that reports a cheater, including GamerDoc, has to create like a detailed report so that he then can send it to the company, and the company can reproduce and, you know, find the evidence. So he hopes to be able to open this up to the rest of the world and create a website rather than a Discord chat, which is still something that I feel like not a lot of people would use. And we'll see if that works, because I feel like that's going to open up a lot of, it's going to make it harder for him and his friends to filter fake reports. Because if you know, there's nothing nothing will stop people from reporting their friends or their enemies for cheating when they haven't cheated. So I think it may be a challenge to really scale this up.
Well, Lorenzo, thank you for coming on the pod. Thank you for hosting the pod in my absence.
My pleasure.
You did phenomenally.
Thank you.
And this is just another story we've done together where cyber is in our hearts and across our society.
Cyber is everywhere. Thanks for having me.
Cyber is everywhere.
Glad you're back. Welcome back.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Welcome back, Jason. Welcome back.
Hey, Ben. We didn't do a cipher last week. I'm sorry to our listeners. It was an extremely hectic week, but we're back.
Well, welcome back to the danger zone, bro.
Yeah, I hope I sound okay. I'm on a gamer headset this week, not my standard dulcet tones Shure microphone.
Wow. We just did a gamer themed episode, so...
That's why I'm doing it. I do it for the gamers.
Hell yeah. I always make it very clear I am not a gamer.
I'll be back on the good mic next week, but I think this should probably sound fine.
Sounds good to me. Well, let's just get to it. Let's get back. Let's bring back the cipher. Cipher it up.
Are you even going to tell your beloved fans where you've been? Broadly speaking, like don't tell them where you've been, but I mean, your mysterious absence.
Broadly speaking, I was just on a jaunt investigating
some stuff,
domestic neo-Nazi terrorist organizations and their goings on in America.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, we'll have some cool stuff coming, both in podcast and in television format.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Well, speaking of something explosive, see what I just did there? I saw this. This just happened, but this explosion, we don't know what's going on right now in Beirut, what the explosion is, what its origins are. There's a lot of people throwing allegations around on Twitter, but the dumbest one, or the dumbest set of allegations I've seen so far, especially one tweet, which was like, that's a mushroom cloud. It's definitely an atomic bomb of some kind, which even as a non-explosives expert, I can assure you, not true. But our amazing reporter, Matthew Galt, did a little deep dive on the conspiracy theorists who were adamantly insisting this thing was a nuke.
Yeah, so to be clear, we're recording this, I don't know, an hour and a half after the explosion happened in Beirut, so we don't really know what happened here. It seems like initial thoughts are that a fireworks factory seems to have exploded perhaps, and then also hit like a grain silo or a fertilizer silo or something like this. Like, we don't really know. Initial reports suggest that some people have died. So it's obviously a very scary thing that happened, and it played out, you know, in real time because so many people took a video of it and then tweeted it. So it's like, yeah, this is clearly like a major world event because it's a really big explosion in, you know, the capital of Lebanon, which is a country that has, you know, had a lot of terrorism lately. It's just been a bit of a hot spot in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crossroads for both sort of this Hezbollah Iran-backed political power and also, you know, the Western-backed, Saudi-backed political entities in the country. So it's a place that's certainly, it's of interest geopolitically, and there's some tension going on.
Right, right. But I guess initially, like, there's nothing to suggest that this was a terrorist attack. We simply don't know. But I think something like this happens and people try to explain it right away, and you have, you know, like nuclear arms experts who will look at this and say immediately, this is not a nuclear blast. Like, it's obvious, it has none of the telltale signs of a nuclear blast, despite the fact that there is, you know, a mushroom cloud and a sonic boom or like a blast wave. I mean, we see that with conventional weapons and big explosions all the time. I'm not a weapons expert either, but Matthew Galt on our team, who's been on this podcast before, writes often about nuclear proliferation and nuclear weapons. So, you know, he talked to some people that he works with all the time, nuclear weapons experts, and they're like, yeah, this is not a nuclear weapon. It's obviously not.
No,
and
I mean, like,
you have people sort of wildly speculating that it is, and you have other people who are not weapons experts saying that this was a controlled blast and definitely a nuke, you know?
Yeah, I mean, people forget that there was pre-atomic explosions. There was massive explosions that didn't involve anything with a nuclear half-life. You know, like, there were massive, massive explosions. And they actually measure nuclear weapons by the power of like TNT by ton or something like that. So it's not even necessarily a measurement that's done with nuclear weapons in mind. So there's all sorts of these types of massive explosions that can happen. I mean, even just like a few years ago, there was the mother of all bombs dropped. That wasn't an atomic weapon. Like, come on.
Right. And so, I mean, I think it's notable to talk about this because it's like the life cycle of conspiracy theories is just so fast now, where it's like this happened. And then 15 minutes later, you have sites like Zero Hedge and a few others saying, you know, this was definitely like an attack on Hezbollah or Hezbollah attack or what have you. Like, it's unclear like what people are saying. You have people saying that it was definitely a controlled explosion. You have people saying it was definitely a nuclear weapon. And it's like, the responsible thing here is, you know, we can say what it's not, but we can't definitely say what it is until there's been a little bit more investigation into it. I mean, it happened an hour ago. So it's like, you just kind of see these things happen and you see how things can spiral out of control very quickly. You have people like drawing conclusions really with no evidence to back it up. And you have people saying like, oh, well, it's the 75th anniversary of the Hiroshima bomb. So like, clearly that must have something to do with
God.
It. And it's like, it's just like, this is not good.
We are just in a hellscape right now. Like, just like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
The conspiracy theories right now, it's just like, whew. Oh my God.
Yeah. Not good.
It's not good. It's really not good. Okay. So this is a great story from Samantha Cole. Motherboard's very own Samantha Cole about OnlyFans. She kills this beat, I gotta say.
Yeah, so this was a collab between her and Joseph Cox, and I think we basically wrote a big story about this a few weeks ago, in which we wrote about a website called Thought Hub, which is stealing OnlyFans content. It's scraping it and then reposting it and selling it cheaper. Then people are finding it on OnlyFans, and It's obviously illegal in many different ways. And this week we saw a lawsuit filed against Thought Hub, but we also saw it filed against Cloudflare and Bang Bros as well. And they named Cloudflare because Cloudflare is protecting Thought Hub from DDoS attacks and things like this. So this is something that's come up a lot of times before where it's like, Cloudflare controls a lot of the underlying infrastructure of the internet, or it's like an internet infrastructure company that has the ability to either protect sites from DDoS attacks or not protect them. And in a few extreme instances, Cloudflare has removed protection from certain sites. I'm blanking on the name of the massive Nazi site, which surely you will know, Stormfront,
Iron March.
But Stormfront a few years ago, like Cloudflare was protecting that. And then the CEO wrote basically a blog post.
Up until last year.
Yeah. And they were like, we're not going to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it got attacked by hackers and things of this nature. And then Bang Bros is named because Bang Bros is advertising on Thought Hub. So it's like this Bang Bros in many ways is helping to keep this site that's existing based on stealing content from adult performers, and it's just like a big, it shows that these sites can't really exist in a vacuum. Like they can't exist without the help of people who are scraping this this content, from people who are helping to monetize the sites, from site companies like Cloudflare, etc., that are protecting them. And I don't know how likely this complaint is to succeed, especially when it's going after Cloudflare and Bang Bros, who are only sort of tangentially involved. But when you talk about like a lawsuit against Thought Hub for stealing content and profiting off of it, that seems like a slam dunk.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So there's been some talk recently of Microsoft buying TikTok in the US. We got a bit of a story on that.
Yeah, I don't really know what's going to happen here because this story keeps moving and changing very quickly. But the broad strokes of it are basically TikTok has been in the news constantly over the last few weeks. We had Amazon issue a ban of its employees using TikTok on work devices, and then it sort of rolled it back. And then you had India banning TikTok, and then you had one of the big financial firms saying that employees couldn't have TikTok on their phone. And then this all sort of spiraled into like senators calling for a ban on TikTok. And eventually this week, or last, I guess over the weekend, Donald Trump said that he was going to consider banning TikTok. And it's like, A, it's unclear whether any of this is serious, like if he's seriously considering this or what the mechanism for banning TikTok would be. There's also this mechanism in U.S. law that I only recently learned about, and it's very complicated. Like, I actually would love to know more about it. But basically, there is a board of regulators who are able to compel foreign companies to sell their interests in a company that operates in the U.S. To a U.S. company. So I know that this is a podcast and I should have come prepared, but I don't remember the name of it, but I do know the example, the only time it's ever been invoked was a Chinese company bought Grindr a few years ago. And this board, this regulatory board, basically forced that Chinese company to sell its interests in Grindr to an American company.
ByteDance.
Well, ByteDance is the company that owns TikTok, but okay. ByteDance did not buy Grindr. Yeah, so ByteDance is the Chinese company, and basically there's a few, I guess, fears here, many of which are based on xenophobia, and others which are, I think, a little bit more real, for lack of a better term. But it's basically like ByteDance owns TikTok. It's massively popular in the United States. It's a Chinese company, and people are concerned that the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, could compel TikTok to, hand over data on Americans, or that it could somehow manipulate the algorithm to help the Chinese in some way. And it's like, it's all quite like some of it is blown out of the water. Other parts of it are like, yeah, that's a real concern, but it's a concern with Facebook. It's a concern with Twitter. It's a concern with any social media company. We haven't seen Facebook being a great like arbiter of the truth or a great protector of data here in the United States either. So you have a bit of this just like anti-competitive, protectionism going on. And you also have this xenophobia going on, and you also have legitimate concerns about like what is happening to all this data and non-transparent algorithms and what have you.
Right. So, but it's also just kind of goes back to the whole, I think it's quite clear that President Trump has used this TikTok as a way of, it's a dividing line as well, right? It's a dividing tactic, because his whole thing is, whenever the administration is under fire, they go after something Chinese.
Right. It's a cudgel that he can hold and be like, well, look, the Chinese are trying to do something. And there's like with Huawei, we had the whole podcast on Huawei, but it's like with Huawei, there's been no evidence really that, TikTok or ByteDance are doing any of the things that people accuse them of, which is manipulating algorithms, spying on Americans, etc. They've had some, they've had some security issues, but these security issues are similar to ones that we've seen from American companies where there's a bug that has been patched or what have you. So anyways, that was a long windup, but basically we had Parker Higgins, who is he used to work for the EFF. He, I think, now works for the Freedom of the Press Foundation, wrote a piece for Motherboard about how, selling TikTok to Microsoft isn't going to solve the problems with social media or the problems with TikTok, because yes, an American company would then own it. But at the same time, it's like, we're not going to get transparency into the algorithm. We're not going to get transparency into how the data is being used or whether it's being sold in ways that are detrimental to users. And it's like, this is a problem with all of social media. We need to take more control over social media or have better regulations and transparency into these things, into how these networks work, if we want to fix this problem at all,
Completely agree. Well, it was good to be back on the old Cypher with you, Jason.
Yeah, good to have you. Good to have me.
Good to have you. Say. It is. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. I'll talk to you next week.
All right. I'll have my mic back next week.
Yeah, please do. Farewell.
Okay. All right. Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.